Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is, of course, the Writer's Block. It is Thursday, and I am your host, Gina, on the air with Russ Avison, and of course, Bobby Jean is right. And if you don't know that music, unless it, you're...
I'll tell you what, Jim, that music was a long way from ordinary.
It was, well, very close to A Long Way from Ordinary. That music, of course, was from HBO's Deadwood. So, if you can see the horse running through the mud and stuff, that's very cool.
Right outside my window.
Right outside your window. There you go. Hey, look, I have a little announcement before we start all the nonsense tonight, Russ. This is just a real quick word to all that are on forced or enforced furloughs and days off or laid off or fired or just plain staying home because of the coronavirus. We really do appreciate you listening to our show, and we realize that you have a lot more options than just listening to LA Talk Radio on the computer. So we do thank you. And we also hope that the whole crew of the Writer's Block, that things get back to normal fairly soon. We're all kind of hurting. And so, again, thank you so much for listening. And that's from us at the Writer's Block to you out there listening and Radio Land, wherever you are. So, that being said, Russ, I assume you're having a great day.
Every day is a great day. Every day you wake up on the right side of the dirt.
Well, that's true. Every day you wake up and suck oxygen.
There you go. But no, everything is going fine out here. Of course, we're still on lockdown, and we have no dogs boarding with us and haven't had for about a month now. So, but other than that, it's fine. The weather has been beautiful in California the last couple of days. We got rain coming tomorrow. But other than that, you know, life is but a dream.
Very cool. Well, you know, I started a new website for you. It's www.sendrussmoney.com.
We're going to crowdfund it for a while, huh?
Yeah, why not? I mean, here you're stuck out there in that 20 acres with no income. That's got to be rough. So, and all those orange trees that somebody's got to pick, and I guess it's going to be you now, huh?
No, that we'll still get, but we still got to water them and take care of the weeds and all that
that's
stuff.
True.
And we still have 18 dogs of our own to be taken care of. So,
that's true.
And a couple horses and goats and sheep. We had five baby sheep born in the last 3 days.
Yes.
A pair of twins and then triplets.
I think that's so very cool. Baby sheep are, you know, lambs are just like, except for the Greeks. Keep them away from the Greeks because they, a little bit of jelly, they're different.
That we don't want.
Yeah, there you go. Well, let's talk a little bit about who we have coming up tonight because she is an amazing, amazing woman. Her name is Ann Charles. She is a USA Today best-selling author who writes spicy, award-winning mysteries full of mayhem, adventure comedy, and suspense.
And
she
gore.
Writes, and gore, oh boy. She writes the Deadwood Mystery Series, Jackrabbit Junction Mystery Series, Dig Site Mystery Series, Deadwood Undertaker Series with her husband Sam Lucky, and AC Silly Circus Mystery Series, and that is a mouthful. Her Deadwood Mystery Series has won multiple national awards, including the Daphne du Maurier? I have no idea. I'm not French. For excellence in mystery suspense, and has a BA in English with an emphasis on creative writing from the University of Washington, and is a member of the Sisters of Crime and Western Writers of America. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Anne Charles. Yay.
Hi, guys. Yay. Thank you for having me on tonight.
Oh, my gosh. Fun. You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Well, we had the same publicist.
Yes. He's wonderful.
Yes. You know what? Everybody says the same thing. He's wonderful. He's wonderful. Well, you know, Russ and I just read your book. He just spewed the title, which was a long way from ordinary. It's yes. Book 2 of the mm-hmm. Deadwood Undertaker series, by Anne mm-hmm. Charles and your husband Sam Lucky.
Right.
And an interesting writing combination, because it's not often that a husband and wife write a book together or and stay married. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've remodeled our home, you know, not houses like for a business, remodeled houses together that we've lived in, two kids together. And so we thought we could write some, you know, a series together. It's tough. He handles me pretty well. So, I mean, it's a lot of back and forth and communication and all that good stuff, just like, you know, having kids and deciding what to do.
Yeah.
So it was an adventure. We thought we'd try, and it's worked. And, you know, there's tense moments, of course, but if someone asked me when we wrote the first one, Life at the Coffin Joint, what happened when we disagreed, you know, about something in the story. And we argue, you know, just like anybody else, you argue your point, but
sure.
Otherwise our kids' eyes glaze over now because we're always talking about these characters and they're like, is this a real person we have to worry about? Or is this in your books? So yeah, they're a little sick of it, I think, but
you should tell your kids that the characters in the book were based on the kids.
Well, I think that would be reaching a little bit far, since the characters in this book are a little on the outside. Let's put it nicely. There's some very gruesome stuff in this book, and I love it because I write gruesome. So, good. I mean, you know, I get a lot of comments from people, especially readers of the aficionados of the West, saying, oh, my God. And we talked about this the other night, that, oh, my God, they really use the F word that much? Yeah, they were very uneducated people, most of them.
and coming from all over, too. I mean, it wasn't like they were all super educated coming together. They were
no.
from everywhere in the world coming. So,
and you know, mix. Doing a lot of research on the people and how they talked back in the Old West, the one thing that struck me as very funny, and I was very surprised, was that the use of the F word was more prevalent amongst the soiled doves than it was the men visiting them.
That is interesting.
It was kind of interesting. So, well, let's get a little bit into this book. If you want to kind of give us a brief synopsis, we'll talk a little bit about it, and then we'll move on to other bigger and better stuff.
Sure. It's the second book in the Deadwood Undertaker series. And there is, of course, as you said, some gore. She, the heroine, Clementine, is a Undertaker. So we are seeing a little bit, you know, up close and personal with the bodies they're bringing in and what's going on. And she, you know, the mystery part of it is, of course, her studying to figure out, what does this mean? You know, the way this guy was killed, or this person was killed, or this, you know, soiled dove was killed. What's it all, you know, who was at fault? So that's kind of the mystery within the whole series. But a lot of it is, you know, the whole Western mixed with paranormal, which is so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to have villains that you can't normally have in a Western, you know, where,
right.
you know, it's a water war or a range war. It's not, it's sort of like a range war, but at a different level going on behind mm-hmm. the scenes and the good guys and the bad guys. So this whole Undertaker series is, I have another series, my Deadwood Mystery series, that is the right. award-winning one. And this is the same town, the same story world, set back in the Old West, so that we can see all the weird stuff going on in the contemporary series, what right. was going on back then, how things were, you know, developing and all that was going on. And then, of course, because there's paranormal, we can have people, ghosts slash people that go back, you know, are in each series, which is a whole lot of fun to get to see maybe a ghost in the contemporary series as someone who was still alive and what was going on. So right. we get to explore that as well, which is great, as well as all the Western, you know, elements and things that were happening in Deadwood with the mines and the gold rush. So mm-hmm. we have a lot of fun with just we talked about this the other night, being so accurate about your history
mm-hmm.
and doing your research, but then having fiction come in, you know, meld with it and telling a fun story at the same
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm. I found that sometimes you get the locale right, you get the town right, you get everything right, and then sometimes it's a little hard to put the character in the town. It takes a little right. bit of work. So you right. did very well, actually. I have to tell you that I love your character. What's her name?
Clementine.
Yeah. Clementine.
What a great yeah. character.
Oh, well, that's fun.
She's a little on the gross side, but I mean, what a great character.
Well, you know what? You can see, though, you know, I see parts of her that could be a current day millennial.
Oh, absolutely.
I see that. But I was curious, and it works definitely, but why an Undertaker and then why a woman Undertaker?
Well, this goes back to me. The other series that I write, the Deadwood Mystery series, it was book 9 of that series. I was writing that last year, the year prior. But anyway, I was writing that book, and my husband and I were watching some documentary on television and about the Old West. We do so much. We love Deadwood. We go there every year, multiple times if we can. My mom was there. So it was something along the lines where it had a little bit of that in it. And there was something on Undertakers, and I looked at him and I said, have you ever heard of an Undertaker, you know, a female Undertaker back then? You always see the guys, you know, building coffins, all that stuff sitting out. But I said, you ever heard of a female Undertaker? And so we talked about it a little bit, and I was writing, like I said, book 9 of a contemporary series. And so I had the opportunity to insert in that series them learning about, well, there was this female Undertaker way back when. So it was a great opportunity, you know, to develop what we wanted to do, you know, a prequel of sorts to that series using this female Undertaker, because it goes in line with, as you know, the heroine and another in that story, the Undertaker story, they are what we call executioners in the paranormal world. So females are always executioners. So here we are with an Undertaker who's an executioner, meaning she takes out, you know, non-humans a lot of times. So it all just, it gelled perfectly. And we thought, what a fun thing to do, you know, a little bit different for an Old West book
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
with a female Undertaker.
Yeah.
Well, it works well. It works really well.
It really does. It really does. And Deadwood, actually, in actuality, back in the 18... Well, it started in 18... Well, Deadwood was put together in 1876, yeah, in March, April, something like that. It was a tent city thrown together in the Deadwood Gulch, of course, right down from Sturgis and a lot of other towns that were right there. And I think they had, like, 3 or 4 casket makers, which kind of doubled as the Undertakers. Because they kind of filled up Mount Moriah Cemetery pretty quickly. I think it's one of the people they can say, you know, a dead man for breakfast.
This is something my husband does tons of research for all this. He's and as you guys know, when you write anything that's, you know, Western, historical, you really have to do your research.
Right.
Because you can't screw this up, especially if you're based off a true town, you know, a real town like Deadwood. You can't screw it up, because especially if your mom lives there and she grocery shops there, and she, you don't want her to get tomatoes thrown at her all the time because, you know, right. kids are screwing right. stuff up. So he does so much research, and it's just really fun to learn what was really going on in Deadwood and little tidbits you find out. Like he found bits of stuff about Wyatt Earp having been there for a really short time. You know, yeah, all kinds of stuff there, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. so it was kind of, and deciding then, as you guys know, when you're writing it, how much do we include those real, you know, bigger than life types of characters, and how much do we just mention, you know, but keep it away from that. So you don't want to go too far into real characters of the West, because then you get 20 people that have written books about it, you know, coming in as well. So, but yeah, my husband does so much research, and it's wonderful, because then I come in and say, oh, tell me all about this. And he just spews all this great stuff forth and then writes it on the page. And it's wonderful. He's so amazing at retaining that too. So it's a lot of fun, and it allows me to get to play in the Old West, which I always wanted to do. But again, the time it takes to do all, you know, get that all researched and on the page. That's where he's amazing. He comes in and he goes, you know, gets going and puts all this and writes all this stuff. And yeah, it just makes it so the story comes to life in a way that I couldn't do on my own, especially not having the time to do.
That really brings up a question. Is it, how does that work as a team? I mean, I know you're married, obviously, but how do you work as a team? Like, do you divide up certain job skills within the writing together, or do you just throw ideas back and forth? How do you come up with these things? And you mentioned earlier about sometimes you have your little arguments back and forth as you try and prove your point, but do you have right. certain skill sets that complement each other? How does it work together?
Yeah, it's really, you know, as I said, he's always been a researcher. He worked for years at Microsoft as QA, where he'd find bugs. He's very good at that. You know,
they could
really
use him now.
Yeah.
Yes. But troubleshooting and all that kind of stuff. And he's just, that's where his brain works so well. And then I've been writing stories for years. So I come in, you know, we brainstorm together, and I'll say, okay, let's fill out this plot chart and kind of get a feel for how we're going. And so then we brainstorm, you know, first turning point, midpoint, all that good stuff, and put it on the page. We actually have a big whiteboard on our wall now in our room, or his office, where we write it all out. And then he will go in first, you know, we'll do a scene and sequel for a chapter or two, and then he'll go in first and start writing it. Because like right now, he's over halfway through book three, but I'm finishing mystery series number 11 and trying to get that one done and off, you know, to my editor. And then I will come in and join him, and he'll have the book three quarters of the way done. And then I start back at the beginning, and I go through doing my little things that I do and add into it. And Clementine, I mean, you know, the characters somewhat, Rabbit and Boone and Hank,
right.
Those guys are really, he is so good at their voices and putting their dialogue in. And he's so wonderful with those characters. And he also writes some with Clementine and Hildegard and some of the others, but that's kind of where I come in and get to be part and do, you know, write more of Clementine and her backstory, and including all the, you know, stuff that makes her Clementine as well, you know, little pieces and bits. So it's a combination effort from start to finish, really. You know, we're brainstorming together. We're doing all parts together, editing together. He'll go through. I go through, and then we'll read it together, what, you know, the mesh, you know, and that's right. where what did you change that for? Well, I thought I needed to change this. Oh yeah. Okay. Or, oh, I really liked it that way. Okay. Well, you have a point. We should go back to that. So that's where we hash out, you know, which way we're going with stuff.
Gotcha. Hey, I'm going to put you on hold for just a second. Let's hear a little bit about LA Talk Radio. Hey, J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything on that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is a .com, and they have it all, from music to sports to self-help and, but they even have talk. So why don't you sit back in your favorite chair, put your feet up, tune in to LATalkRadio.com, and give us a listen. Guaranteed to be fun for you, and we're coming at you right now. And of course, they are one of our major sponsors here on the Writer's Block, and we, of course, broadcast weekly live, out live to the radio world here on the Writer's Block. And of course, at the end of every show, there is a podcast available. So you can go on our website and find our podcast, and you can listen to it as many times as you'd like. We are back with our featured author tonight, Miss Ann Charles. Of course, Russ Avison is here, and I am here. And we are talking about her latest book, book two in the Tombstone.
Deadwood.
Not Tombstone, Deadwood. In the Deadwood series about Undertakers, Undertaker series. And we're talking now about writing in tandem, which can be, it can be tough. Let me ask you something, Anne. Having written a book with somebody.
You having there a stroke, Jim?
No, Jerry just walked in and handed me a note, and the water off neighbor turned it off for us. There you go. Okay. That's really nice to know. Okay.
Well, this is, what a down-home show.
Do you find that with writing with another writer, and I wrote another Western called The Last Lonely Trail with my business partner, Richard Polinelli. His first Western, so he did actually very well, except I had to keep him from using terms like cayuse and smoke wagon, but, you know, that's movies. But getting it seamless, and that was the part that was really not tough for us. It actually came fairly easy, but I have read books where they have written by two authors, and you can always tell where the seams are. This book, I couldn't.
Oh, good.
And I really I appreciate that kind of writing, because when two writers can sit down and make something as seamless as this book was, I can't tell where your writing stopped and your husband's writing started, or vice versa. Is there a way that you guys work on that, or does that just come naturally?
Well, I think it's the layering that I kind of talked about, where he'll go through first. And, first of all, you know, like I said, we brainstorm together. We plot the thing together. We're on the same page. And he goes off and he writes the first draft through. And then I come in after and I go through it, all his stuff. So it's not like he wrote a piece and then I wrote a piece. It's very rarely that. Mm-hmm. It's more he wrote and then I come in after him, adding some stuff here and there, changing maybe one thing, maybe moving stuff around. Maybe I think it maybe should start here instead of here. And, you know, so, and then, like I said, we go through together reading it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read out loud usually, and he follows on the screen making the edits. And because I think we do that process, it blends our voices a lot more than making them separate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, we have to agree on, you know, if there's a scene that's causing problems and we disagree on how it should be handled, we have to wait and figure out, you know, how are we going to make this work so that we're both pleased with the result. Mm-hmm. So I think he's the only one I'll probably ever write with. I don't think I'm very good to write with.
I'm not either.
So
why do you say that?
Part of it is I've been writing, when we wrote this first book, I'd already written 25. So wow. I come into it, having had my way for a long time.
Right.
And I'm an indie, so I do have an editor, but it's not like an editor, you know, that's coming in and saying, change this, do this, do that. That's my editor is mainly fixing my many screw ups in the first draft. So I think I come in very indie-minded, and that, you know, headstrong, whatever you want to call it. So it's not easy to sit back and go, well, what do you want to do? It's harder, you know, in that way, and it's hard on the other person who's, you know, trying to get their stuff out there. So I just don't think I make a good – I think most everyone else would just walk away, you know, I'm done. Not going to do this with you. But we've been married. You know, and we're both headstrong in our own ways, and so we understand each other a lot. And so I think we're able to work through a lot of stuff. where writers that aren't married would go, screw you, I'm out of here. So, you know, I just think I'm not really that easy to work with within a story like this.
Well, I'm not going to marry Richard. Trust me. He's already married. So am I. So, but I think that now we talked to a bunch of writers that have written books with other people, and yours is we have heard this particular way before, but we've also and we followed the adage of he wrote the first three chapters, I wrote the second three chapters, but mm-hmm. not until I read completely the first three chapters that he had written to get his flow. So I kind of had to blend my flow in with his.
Right.
So, and it worked out real well for this particular book. I don't know that I would do it again, to be quite frank with you, because it's we do have different differences. I mean, he's an outliner. I'm a pantser. Mm-hmm. I don't follow outlines. I just don't.
Mm-hmm. So, right. Yeah, there's people that bounce all around writing with all kinds of other authors, and I'm really impressed how you can do that, I just think that would be so hard, because it does change your voice. It changes your style a little, you know, or a lot, but to blend it, it brought, you know, for us, a good story. We love the story, so it worked, but I could see where that might go south with some other people where that's like, it's not working for us. So,
Well, I mean, James Patterson is a good example. You know, he writes a lot with other people, but I think the other people actually write the book and he makes the title.
Well, see, I've heard that he outlines, or I read an article once, he does a lot of the outlining and some of that stuff, and then they write and then he comes in and puts his part on it. So it's a mystery. Even doing pulled back like that, how much time does that man have?
I don't know.
He's writing everything.
I know he's got a book a month. I mean, he's his own book of the month club. You know, it's like... Wow. And then he has time to go on TV and hawk him. So there you go.
Yeah, right. I know. I saw he had a Western written with someone else. He's in the Westerns too now.
Yeah.
As well as everything else he's in.
So was Robert Parker before he died. Yeah, he did the Appaloosa. Robert B. Parker. He did the Spencer series, and he wrote that Western Appaloosa, which they made it to a movie. Anyway, dialogue. Let's talk about your dialogue for a minute, because I write a lot of dialogue. I've gotten real used to writing dialogue, and it's really hard. Sometimes it's a little daunting to keep the same dialogue with the same character. And I know that's probably an issue for you guys as well. So what is your guys' trick? Because, I mean, I don't know how I do it. I guess I just have to keep it in my head. How do you guys do it?
Well, again... Sam goes first, does his part. Now, I used to be in my old life a technical writer. So I spent, you know, almost 15 years making sure all the T's were, you know, crossed right, the I's were so I really come into it with that anal basis. So when I come in after him, one of the things that I do is I can clearly see, okay, here's Hank, and here's the way Hank speaks. We need to make sure he stays speaking, you know, with this style. And then here's Rabbit, and he's slightly different. So let's make this, you know, definitely Rabbit with the way Rabbit speaks. So I can step back and see that as I go through after him to try to keep the characters unique, you know, with their different styles of speech, if you will. And then when we read it together, he can then again hear, and it's clear, you know, everything I've gone through with my anal, fix this, do this, change this, you know, put this apostrophe here. And then he can see it even clearer and make sure we've got it right for the characters.
Well, you also have to keep the dialogue true to the period. And that can be a bit tough, too.
Right. Well, and if you have characters that are from different countries.
Right.
Such as Clementine, who speaks many languages and has different, you know, when they swear, they use different words a lot of times to, you know, curse or what have you. So, keeping all that, that can be daunting, especially as the series keeps going.
Exactly. And as I told you, I had that one character from Ireland, Kieran O'Connor. And trying to keep his, I made him as broguey as I could, because he's from County Cork. and he was spent time in the British Army, and they were just all really base. I mean, these guys weren't exactly, you know, from the upper crust of British society. So, you know, he had to be a pretty base character.
So, Anne, have you ever, want to ask you, have you ever tried doing dialogue where you and your husband take a part and you know, you each play a role and you go back and forth and try and develop the dialogue that way? So it's two separate people actually developing that?
We have not. I've heard of that, but I think I would giggle the whole time. I think I would completely ruin it. I'm so not good at acting. Has never been my thing. And, you know, some people say, read your own books. And, no, I have a narrator to read for me because I think I would just, we'd be laughing the whole time. I don't think we'd be very productive. We would have a good time though. I think it's a great idea, especially if you're more of an auditory, you know, style learner.
Right.
Listen, and then you can hear it better. But for us, mainly when I read it aloud and he follows on the screen, that's playing to our strengths. I mean, I'm getting to read, which is what I need, and he's hearing it. So, you know, he's a little more auditory that way and hearing how things the cadence and all that good stuff. But to date, we haven't done that yet.
Do you read your dialogue out loud to get the pentameter and the rhythm? Do you dialogue correct?
I do. I have to put my earphones on, and, you know, the kids are home now every day.
Right. Yeah.
So I'll say, everybody, I'm going to put the earphones in. I'm going to be talking. Don't come over. You know, I'm not talking to you. I'm just reading the stuff out loud to try to make you see how it feels.
Right.
So that makes a big difference, because words like however might look good on the page, but in dialogue, you know, when you're reading through, you're like, whoa, that's too great.
Well, it's like the word to. Nobody says the word to. Everybody says the word I'm going to, or to the store. I'm going to the store. So, I mean, when you read it that way, you have to say, okay, it should be a T-A, not a T-O. But if you do a T-A, people are going to complain. So just put the T-O in there and know it's tough.
Right. That's like, going and gonna.
Going to the store. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
I'm going to take another real quick break here, and then we'll be back with you in just about 45 seconds. And right now, we're going to hear from the folks that the website was written for, www.sendrussmoney.com. Let's hear a bit about All Dogs Rule. You're leaving on vacation. Your tickets have been purchased and your hotel reservations are confirmed. Well, mail delivery's been suspended, but what about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's a place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged buddy a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass and a beautiful country-like setting. Your dog gets to be a dog, so... All Dogs Rule offers additional services, including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and additional training. So visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home with that smile on his face, well, he leaves yourself wondering whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. All Dogs Rule, 805-524-1100. Give them a call. And make sure you go to that website, sendrussmoney.com.
Hashtag sendrussmoney.
I have to tell you, if you live anywhere in Southern California and you want to take a Sunday drive, drive up to Fillmore and go out to All Dogs Rule, or at least buy there. It's a gorgeous piece of country. Russ has, 20 acres out there? Yeah, Russ?
Yes, sir.
And it's populated with orange trees and fruit trees, and it's right on the Sespe River. And it's actually gorgeous. And he's done a lot of work out there, and it's a very, very nice place.
And the Sespe's running pretty nicely right now.
I'm sure it is. And if you're looking for a place to stick your dog for the weekend, Think about all dogs rule. That's it. Is if you're in Southern California. If you're not, well, it doesn't matter. So
yeah, we'll take. You can fly them to us. We'll pick them at the airport.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, we're back. It is now 7:34. We're on the phone with Ann Charles, and we're talking a little bit about dialogue right at the moment. And if you want to call and talk to Ann, if we can get the phones working, if not, I'm not too sure. But anyway, we'll try. The number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And welcome back, Ann.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, sure. Let's talk a little bit about your story development, because there's a lot of writers, and this show is geared towards new writers. And a lot of them kind of wonder how to get a story moving, and how do I write? What do? I sit down. How do I write a story? Where do I start? So can you give our listeners, especially the new ones, a little bit of an idea of how to get a book going or a story going?
Sure. You know, the first thing, though, my son, for example, he's writing a story. And what I tell him is, first and foremost, as a new writer, get to the end. You know, just let's make sure you can not get bogged down in the middle. Start, keep going. And it might not be the most coherent. A lot of writers don't sell their first book. It's the learning process book. So I think it's really important to show yourself that you can write a whole book and reach the end, and then go back and start, you know, editing and cleaning up. But after you've done that a couple times, then I think it's more important, for me anyway, I like to have a theme. I like to have something that every scene or sequel within the story, you know, we're working towards the story question or the theme of the book, keeping that in mind so it feels like it's all tied together nicely when you're finished. And then I also like to, you know, chapter by chapter do, like I said, scene and sequel, building that. So every, you know, you have your scenes, you have your reactions, which is sequel, and you keep going through the story, building and hitting your first turning point and your midpoint and then your second turning point. And, you know, going through that way, that's, for me, that's really important, because even though I'm sort of a pantser, I also sort of need to have a structure, some kind of background to it all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you know where you're going to go? Like, you started out by saying, you know, when you start writing, get to the end. But do you have the end in mind when you begin? So you have you're basically designing the roadmap to get to where you already know you're going?
That's a good question.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. There are books where I kind of, you know, I have this idea how I'm going to do this particular one in the series, and I have an idea on the ending. And, you know, this is like with my contemporary Deadwood series, and my husband Sam will say, well, do you know where you're going to end that one? And I'll say, I have an idea. I have an overall series arc, so I'm keeping that in mind as I write each book within the series. And I have, you know, the growth that I want to happen with the characters in mind. But sometimes I don't know how I'm going to work it out, but we're going to get the story question answered. Because I do think, you know, knowing that story question and kind of filtering it throughout the book is really important as well in each scene and sequel. But no, not always. I'll be honest, not always. Sometimes it's the adventure for me as the writer to write the story and see where we end up. On these books with my husband, we tend to know a little bit more because he likes structure like that. He likes to know where yeah. we're going. You know, imagine us in a car together. I'll just keep going on this road. I need to know where we're going, honey. Uh-huh. So, yeah, it really depends on the book, you know, to be honest. It's not always, you know, a brilliant, here it is. It's more sometimes just get that out. Look at that. Look what that is. Oh, we better fix that a little bit, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that you sometimes will get a book or an idea, and you got a starting point and you have an ending point, but when you get 9/10 of the way through the book, you go, nah, this ending isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Now I got to go back and completely rethink the ending.
So, yeah. Well, the one I'm working on, Deadwood 11, in the other series, I knew the ending when I started, but what's actually happened is similar to what I thought, but it's different.
Uh-huh.
But I still like it. So yeah, when I go to edit it, once I finish, I'm on the last chapter, and I'll start tomorrow going back through the whole thing to get it ready for my editor. Uh-huh. Then I'm going to have to go and, you know, put little things in here and there to make it all seamless then. But yeah, that's outlines are just something to make you feel confident sometimes
right.
that you can do it. And that's
right.
it, that's oh. it. Guidelines.
Okay, the big question of the evening now. No, it's not the question, but it is one of the big questions of the evening. Do you find that your characters drive your novel? Do you find it that they drive the story as you're writing, or do you drive the story and tell the characters where to go?
I think for me especially, I can't answer for my husband on that, but for me, it's characters.
Yeah.
Everything is character driven. They decide what we're going to do, and they throw weird things at me, and I go, okay, if you say so.
Right.
So, yeah.
So like all writers, you make them real in your head.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's the way I do it as well. And most writers that we've talked to on this show have the same philosophy. They create the characters, they make them alive in their head, and they let them run the story.
Right.
And if you try to change it, they don't let you.
Right. I often think of it more as peeking through the keyhole and reporting back to the reader what I'm watching.
There you go.
You know,
wow, that's a great analogy. I like that.
Great analogy. Yeah.
Looking through the keyhole.
Well, I like that. Mind if I use that?
It's not at all. It's very much the way it feels.
That's the way Jim works. He steals everything.
I steal everything. Dialogue. I steal storylines. I mean, I'm the word. No, I don't. That's a lie. Okay. The name of this show is The Writer's Block. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get through it?
I do. I burn out periodically because, you know, this indie game is not always easy. And I write the regular books I write on my own are 120 to 130,000 words, and they take me 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then to shift and go into the next one, it gets to me sometimes. That's one of the reasons we started this together was my husband, you know, he's always been a part of the business. He's been doing a lot of other stuff in it, but this is a way to help give me a little relief in the, you know, off time so that I'm not constant, boom, creatively putting out all this stuff. He's, you know, I come in next and I help edit and get the book, you know, ready to go. So mm-hmm. I burn out. It blocks me. I find the best thing I can do a lot of times is I'm very visual. So watching movies, I love a lot of old Westerns going in and just soaking up movie after movie that I love. And then of course, probably like you guys, if you watch a movie, you break down, how are they doing that dialogue? How could I make him look like, you know, do that face he's doing on the
right,
page?
Right.
And that will get me going again and excited to get back to writing because I want to produce something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of how I work through. When I'm writing a book like right now, it's, you get it on the page no matter what. Too bad if it's crap. Get it out there.
Right.
Because we can fix it, you know. Add a little tequila, we can fix it up real nice.
Well, we discussed the other night about trying to publish and also write and how much of a detraction that can be. And I find that to be true. And I'm struggling right now to finish a book. I'm about halfway done. And I have so many other things I've got to do. I can't find the time to sit down and just, I mean, without me being exhausted, sit down and try to write. And you had mentioned the same thing. So you did the smart thing and you got out of publishing.
I did. Yeah. For the first 4 years, almost five, I was a publisher and an author, and we had other author books, you know, that we published as well. And it just was getting, like you said, you get pulled so many ways because your authors that are, you know, writing for your publishing company, they would like you to help promote and market.
Right.
And that's something that I knew well, I taught myself well. So I was the one doing a lot of the marketing and all that for them. And it just sucked the life out of me to where writing my own stories was just tough. You know, I didn't have the energy to go in and I didn't see my kids much. I was so busy. And I just decided, you know, I've got to make a change. And I chose to go with just being an author. I'm still doing all my own publishing, but at least, you know, the only author I have to take care of is me for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I know what a pain in the butt I am. So I can put up with me and keep doing it. So, yeah, it was just, I think it's wonderful, people who help and are publishers. It's just not something I think that was I was that good at for that long.
Right. That's why we have backed off a lot on the promotion side of the pub. I mean, we'll get your book published for you. We'll get it on all the online booksellers. We'll get it there. But as far as shameless self-promotion goes, that's the author's problem.
Yeah.
You know,
it really, and that's throughout publishing now.
Right.
This is something, I mean, traditional publishers, for those authors I know who, majority, I'm sure, you know, Stephen King doesn't have to worry about this.
Right.
But yeah, most authors have to do their own self.
Well, independent publishing now is the rage. And there's a lot of reasons why authors choose to do that or go to an indie publisher. But the bottom line is they have more control over their story.
Right.
So as I'm sure you feel that you have much more control over your books than going to Random House or whatever.
Right. I didn't realize what a control freak I was until I started publishing for myself.
We all are control freaks, and every single one of us. And if you're a writer, you're a control freak. And when somebody starts messing with your stuff, no.
So, well, you know, with my first book, The Deadwood, the one that won so many awards way back when, I actually was going shopping at traditional publishers. And that's the one, the first one, I made it clear to Final Acquisitions at one of the big guys. And marketing turned me down in the end. Which at the time I was just like, no, now what? But I'm so glad that happened because, you know, I've watched other author friends who have had series canceled, you know, all the nightmare stuff, and the rights, you know, are still tied up. So I, you know, at first it was devastating not to get that final approval and get to get published by the, you know, but in the end, I am grateful that I, you know, dodged that bullet sort of. Because I didn't know anything. I didn't understand rights, certainly, and probably would have signed off way too many
rights. Right. I'm going to hold you right there. We're going to do one last little word. And, of course, you're going to know this individual. And if you wouldn't mind, Ronan, let's hear a little bit about Creative Edge Publicity. Okay, you've written a book. Now what are you going to do? Well, why don't you give Creative Edge Publicity a try? You see, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. Like an old pair of shoes or an old friend, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicists, and you can find them at www.creative-edge.services. And if you're looking for a publicist, you can't go wrong. Give them a shot. www.creative-edge.services. Talk to Mickey directly. His phone number is on the website. And as far as a publicist goes, the guy is magic. And he's mine, and he's Ann's publicist as well. And give him a holler if you're looking for a publicist or just want to chat about publishing or writing. Mickey's a good guy to talk to. Okay, we're kind of going to be winding it up here in just a minute, Ann. So let's a couple more questions for you before let me ask you one. This has been on my mind since we talked the other night. How does one, and I find it hard to switch genres. I can't write like mystery and then go to a paranormal and then go to humor and then go to suspense. How do you do that?
Well, I actually, between books, I'll finish this Deadwood number 11 that I'm working on, hopefully tonight, and get the edits done in the next few weeks and go through the process with that. But in the meantime, I'm getting ready to go back to Deadwood Undertaker 3 with my husband. As I said, he's already working on it. So I'll go back and I'll read number 1, Life at the Coffin Joint, and then I'll read A Long Way from Ordinary, and I'll get that whole feel back in my head. And then I come in and start working, you know, doing what I do for book three. And I'll do that every series. As soon as I finish it and I switch to the next one, I will reread the books in my series. This gets to be a pain. The Deadwood main series, my Deadwood Mystery series, like I said, I'm on book 11. That means I read 10 full novels before I get started. But by doing that and switching to my different series, it keeps me feeling not burned out. It's fresher. It's fun. Oh, I'm back now here, and we're with these characters again who've been sitting in the green room for a year, you know, waiting their turn. But I find that by switching and rereading the books again, it helps me get over into that other genre mix that I'm doing and reacquaint me with, okay, what were we doing over here? So I just, from the start, I've been bouncing with these different series. From early on, I had three going. So it was just a matter of, I don't know. I just like switching gears like that and trying something different to keep it fresh for me.
You know, that makes so much total sense to me, because I know that sometimes I'll have a book that I read and I really enjoy it. I'll finish it. I'll put it on a shelf. And maybe, you know, a couple years later, I'll see it. I'm going to pick that up and read it again. And it's so much different. And I think it has to do, like you're saying, where you'll reread it. I think you have to be ready to accept certain things that are in a book. And maybe you were only at a certain place in your life the first time you read or wrote it, that it had certain meaning to you. And then when you reread it, you accept it in a different way.
Oh, yeah. I think I agree with you. Yeah. It feels different. It's, of course, as we age and things, all the experiences you've had, you know, you
speak
come
for yourself
again,
about that aging thing.
Yeah. Well, watch the aging thing.
Watch the aging thing. But I think it, and it depends on the writer. Some writers only want to write, you know, Victorian era romances, and that's great. I don't like sitting on that one series that long, because I'm afraid it's going to get boring for me. And then if it's boring for me, the author, then I'm going to be bored on the page and the readers are going to hate it. So keeping it fresh means moving around for me and switching gears.
Okay. You know what? We're out of time, and I really hate to do that, because that's just is such a great conversation. But unfortunately, we do have to leave you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And if you wouldn't mind, give our audience your email and your website, if you wouldn't.
Sure. Email Ann, A-N-N, there's no E on that, at annecharles.com. And the website is www.annecharles.com.
Okay. And the book, of course, is, what is
the
book?
A Long Way From
Ordinary. It's a Deadwood, what is it? Oh my God. My brain just
Deadwood
took
Undertaker.
Fart.
Yeah.
There you go.
One comment I'm going to make just before we scat is that I wanted to tell you, Anne, that when I read this, some books you read and you kind of cruise through them and they're pretty easy reading and they're enjoyable. This was, I don't want to say difficult. It took more work to read it, but also I felt so much more connected with it. I told Jim earlier, I said, there's certain scenes there. I got done. I felt like I wanted to go take a shower because I felt stinky and dirty.
I know.
It really put you in this place, and I hope that came across as a compliment, because it was.
And there are certain scenes that you have to go back and reread, because you're not really sure that you actually read that. So
I think that's a good thing. I take that as a compliment, because there's depth in the story and there's depth in the characters. And
excellent.
If you're feeling gritty and gross after the end, that means we brought it to life enough that it felt
exactly
real.
That's perfect. Exactly what I meant. Perfect. So good. I'm glad you took it in the spirit
perfect.
That was meant.
Well,
yes,
thank you so
for
much
that.
For joining us tonight, Anne. It was just a real hoot and a pleasure having you. And I hope you'll come back and visit us.
I'd love to. You guys are a blast. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you so
thank
much
you for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. And again, that is A Long Way From Ordinary. It's available on Amazon and all online booksellers. And you could probably go to our website and buy one as well. And great. Charles, thank you so much again for being with us tonight. And next week on The Writer's Block, we have a returning writer, Mr. J.R. Sanders, John R. Sanders, in his new book, Stardust Trail. And we'll be talking to J.R. And until then, Mr. Evison.
Jim, it's been a pleasure again. Thank you.
Always. And Bobby Jean, wherever you are. And of course, myself, Jim Christina, and for The Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.